Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Approval of the minutes of the conference committee of January the 12th.
I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of January the 12th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. We just have an information item, although it's an interesting one, for the committee's review, and that is an update on the bus stop enhancements program. I actually asked the staff to put this on the agenda. Bus stops for me are the front door to the bus system. They're a primary interface with bus customers. I had a chance to look at the previous March 10th board action on the review and approval of the guidelines and asked the staff if they would bring to the board a status review. So with that, Mr. Beeple.
Thank you. You kind of stole the introduction in our discussions with the chairman. We've often said that the bus operator is the first contact that we have with the public, and he actually corrected us. The first impression that you get of Metro and other systems is the bus stop where the people actually come to catch the bus to communicate with the bus operator. Just some background, and many new board members, and a lot of activities have taken place in, as Mr. Downs mentioned, in March 2010, the board approved the guidelines for the design and placement of transit stops. This document is in your package. In December of 2010, WMATA executed a Tiger Grant on behalf of the region to enhance 167 bus stops along priority corridors. And then in March 2012, WMATA executed a grant through the Council of Governments for $1.2 million for additional improvements. And we continue to work with the jurisdictions since many of these bus stops, our infrastructure is really not ours. It really belongs to the jurisdiction, so we want to work with jurisdictional staffs to make the improvements and for the correct placement and improvements in bus stops throughout the system. The next page is just a sketch of different things that exist at a bus stop or can exist depending on the amount of usage. You can see we have signage, we have pullouts, we have benches, we have concrete pads, sidewalks, accessible cuts for the persons with disabilities, potential trash cans, etc. The new bus stop sign that we're installing throughout the system is on the right side here, and we're in the process over about a three-year period of replacing all of the signs in the system with this type of sign, trying to provide more information. Next page is kind of a summary of the magnitude of what we have. We have 11,490 bus stops throughout the system. You can see the breakdown, at least 3,000 in each of the three jurisdictions. If there's sufficient ridership at a bus stop, we try to provide a bus stop information case, and as you can see, we have over 7,000 of those throughout the system. Maps in shelters, 806, and bus stop shelters, close to 2,400 shelters, and as you note, the ownership of the shelters has reduced drastically on the metro side. We're down to 597, of which only 185 are actually on the street. So the jurisdictions have taken the responsibilities, added advertising capabilities, and maintain these shelters throughout the system. Again, we coordinate with all of the 12 local and state agencies and property owners in many cases for placement and upkeep of shelters. And, that effort continues. Next page just kind of summarizes the staff that we have and the efforts that we have within bus planning, which resides in bus. We've consolidated staff, and the shelter and sign crew exists within bus planning. The bus stop information cases and map program is there. The safety of bus stops and coordination with joint projects and development take place within that department. Access, working with the ADA department, coordination, jurisdictions again, and making sure or attempting to get the bus stops to be ADA accessible. And again, we work with all the jurisdictions, and as the bottom note says, the four largest have shelter franchise contracts and agreements. there's a lot of activity. We've got, again, 11,400 stops. There's a lot of activity within the system. This is just a list of different projects that are taking place for bus stops. Some of the project implementation on the right side, obviously Silver Spring Transit Center, Tacoma Langley Park Transit Center, all of these activities require bus stops, bus shelters, bus access areas. Vienna, Dunloring, joint development projects are huge. A lot of changes take place during the development project. Interim stops, temporary stops, relocation, and then finally a permanent stop that hopefully increases the access for the public coming in to take the bus or transferring from a rail station. Next page. Kind of in conclusion, because we have some pictures that we want to show you, that, you know, we encourage jurisdictions and partners to adopt and incorporate bus stop guidelines in their local program planning and engineering and design standards as changes take place and improvements take place. We encourage jurisdictions through COG, through their own sources, to obtain grants to enhance these programs. Early coordination, any involvement that we have, that we can have, or their staffs have with development, major projects along bus right-of-way. Not only, again, are these improving bus stops for Metro, but also for the local jurisdictions. And, you know, we continue to develop regional transit centers wherever possible so that we can get, you know, the transfers off of the street and in a facility that is safe and reliable for a long period of time. Again, we work cooperatively to improve bus stop facilities and conditions and access. When we look at the 11,400, I think I failed to mention, we have an inventory of bus stops. We're still waiting for the final input from, I think, Fairfax and Montgomery County. By April, May, we should have a complete inventory, which we'll know exactly what is at every stop. It's going to be updated so that we know what the conditions are. Currently, our estimate is over 3,000 of the stops really do need some improvement to provide access and appropriate conditions for the public that are actually using those stops. With that, if we could, we put some pictures into, I mean, the picture's usually better than 1,000 words, and we have quite a few, but we had run through these quickly. John, will we run through these? Bring it up.
This is the before. Want to run the pictures, or do you want to make the question now?
All right, thank you. Thank you for the report. I'm kind of curious on the project implementation list to get some sense of when some of these are going to be done. So if you could follow up and provide a status report on some of these 10 or 11, 12, 13 projects. And particular interest, since I live in the Tacoma, Silver Spring area, the news has seen a lot on the Silver Spring Transit Center and certainly the inconvenience of bus riders at that location have to walk up half the hill and catch a bus rather than stay at the Metro station. Can you give us some status report on the completion of that project?
I'll ask Jim Hamry to update you on a couple of these projects. Silver Spring?
Yeah, well, Silver Spring, as you've read in the news, is a answer in process right now. We'll find out more information as the final engineering solutions work out. The Tacoma Langley Park is nearing 100% design. There are some right-of-way issues and some final funding decisions that need to be made, as well as an operating agreement. We continue to be fully engaged working with MDOT and MTA engineers to finalize that process. And Union Station, we're currently located out of Columbus Circle and onto E Street and Mass Ave. As they reconstruct Columbus Circle, we'll be glad to follow up with some specific timeframes for that kind of project. Vienna, just
yeah,
literally
I didn't need
last
a rundown
began.
Of all of them. I just wanted to get some eventually dates of targeted completion on some of those, so that would be helpful. That's what I was really looking for.
We'll provide that. So there is progress taking place, and again, some of these pictures on the left side, you know, you see a well-positioned bus stop with a waiting area, concrete, proper signage. On the right side, this is an old picture. Trust me, that sign has been reinstalled. Next. One of the more difficult ones, I think Route 50,
Pennsylvania
Avenue. Again, bus stop is barely visible up in the left-hand corner, and, you know, people are walking along the highway with a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, you know, to get to the bus stop. This is an interesting one over, I told Jim we're not going to talk about where these are, but 7th and H Street, 8,000 people board the bus or alight the bus at this corner during the day, which is more than 20 of the rail stations. So this is, I think, equal to traffic at the East Falls Church rail station at this one corner. So, you know, it's very narrow sidewalk. Again, it's just a high traffic area. I think everybody knows that. But it serves a great deal of people. Again, conditions of, you know, a bus stop here on the left. It does have a shelter. The sidewalk is, you know, in poor condition. The bus stop does have a pullout. Notice that a tree has fallen down on the other side of the shelter. I would imagine by this time that's been fixed. The lower picture, you know, security and everything that has increased since, you know, 2001 after, you know, the bollards and the concrete, you know, people drop-offs, it challenges the bus stop. The bus stop is right above the gray car. But obviously, it's difficult to get into the stop. Next. Again, you know, good sign, you know, good signs of concrete clearance, signage, good sidewalk work, curb cuts on the right side. Here's a challenge, you know, bus stop, you know, nice sidewalk and nice ADA access, but it doesn't access the bus stop. The bus stop is still further up the street, and the challenge with the guardrail and the traffic to get to the actual bus stop, you know, is of concern. Again,
probably doesn't meet ADA accessibility standards.
No. Or any other accessibility standards, in all honesty. Again, some signs of, you know, good work with concrete, shelters, proper signage, et cetera.
Hi, thank you. Interestingly, even a lot of those stations that aren't named, I actually know them, which is, I don't know what that means.
We're not naming them.
A couple of questions. With so many stops and so many conditions, obviously it's very much a collaborative process between the system and the jurisdictions in terms of getting these things in place and maintaining them. A couple of questions. Specifically, who determines that a bus stop will or will not be in a given location, and what is our role in that? And how is the liability for determining that a stop is safe or not? I mean, clearly, a lot of the stops require a lot of caution on the part of pedestrians and drivers. And frankly, the way buses have to work, it's never going to be as safe as any of us would want it to be. It's virtually impossible. But talk just for a moment about how decisions around safety are made with respect to WMATA in a bus stop.
Correct me, Jim, if I'm wrong on this, but I think many of these stops were established long before Metro operated the bus system. So that's the first issue. Metro recommends where bus stops are to be or where we think that it would be a proper place. Again, it is with service planning and everything else. We work with the jurisdictions to try to develop a bus stop at a certain location or relocate it when it's a request. You know, there are people who want bus stops at their location. Seven Corners, very happy to have a transit center and 2,000 people coming and going, but there are people that don't want a bus stop in front of their house or their business. So those things have to be negotiated with property owners. Again, the jurisdictions own the property, and I think have the final, kind of the final say-so as to where the actual stop will be, other than those that are actually on Metro property, which are at the rail stations.
Liability around safety, determination of safety, adequacy, and liability for stop?
Yeah, you know, I think our attempts when working with the jurisdictions, I know their interest is to try to make these changes and improvements to make them as safe and as accessible as possible. Since we don't own the property, I don't know if I could defer to council as to liability as it relates to if something happens at a bus stop.
of an injury, that the injured party would come, would, it is, I'm certain that the injured party would file suit against both WMATA and the property owner. As Mr. Rieckley said, WMATA does not own the property on which these stops are placed. So, as you all know, if you own property, you're generally liable for what happens on it. But typically, it's an interaction between the location and our bus drivers or our buses. So, without expressing an opinion about ultimate liability, certainly I think the injured person would sue both parties.
I mean, I don't want to take us too far down that granular point this morning. I guess it's, as I move through the community, and the slides here remind me, if you, there's a level of standard that you could set that would probably take half of the stops away in terms of determining whether it would be safe for people to get there by some definitions, and because it's an urban, busy environment, and yet it's, as I move through the community, and obviously you do too, it's how can we make them more safe, and so it's more of a comment than it is a serious question to go further right now, but it is something that I am concerned about greatly.
Well, one of the reasons I think for this presentation is we have the guidelines, we have the concepts, and it's just, you know, we just need everybody's involvement in trying to implement this as the highest priority that a jurisdiction can make for it. Thank you for the comments.
Mr. Chairman. I just want to put in a couple of 2 cents. First, as recently finishing the term as chair as the Transportation Planning Board, I'm pleased that the board was able to fund a number of projects through the Tiger Grant process and also through our new Freedom Project that will significantly enhance bus access. I think Mr. Rieckwood is right that the Transportation Planning Board was able to do a lot. Some of it passed through Metro, but most of it, I believe, passed directly to the local jurisdictions. And so the jurisdictions is important, especially with Tiger. The point being was that these projects were shovel ready, they would put people to work, and they would connect people with jobs. We frequently asked what the status of those projects were, and unfortunately, more times than not, they weren't finished yet. And so that's a discussion that we've had with our transportation department. I would encourage all of us to do the same thing. Where funds have been made available, it's very important that we get those projects started and on the street. I did want to speak to a couple of projects I believe Metro has been involved in and encourage you to do more. The bus stop consolidation project, for example, I know we experienced it in our jurisdiction along a very busy bus corridor, which really sought to consolidate the stops and I think enhance the service. And one thing we can consider as we consolidate the stops is enhance the stops that remain. And that's an excellent way to do it. I think that for, you know, too long we've said that you have to have a stop at every block, and that makes the service slower, and it decreases the benefits of riding the bus in some ways. But I think we have to be able to explain that to our customers. But also, if you take a stop away, if you make the next stop even better, that's easy for everybody to understand. The next thing I just wanted to say is that we are pleased to support express bus service on many of our corridors, and had the opportunity just a couple of mornings ago to watch the number of people who would let up one bus pass in order to get on an express bus. So that speaks to the fact that if you can get people downtown quicker, they'll ride the bus, and they'll even wait for the next, or they might walk 2 blocks to get to that express bus. So I would you know, just encourage us to be very aggressive about making those services more efficient, and then I think we can do more with the stops that remain.
If I could just comment before the next question, I appreciate the comments. We certainly think as we do consolidate stops where it's appropriate that if we can make the improvements, that would be great. And again, going back to the last committee, the budget request is really for additional enhancements to some of the express bus service levels, you know, throughout the region in the priority corridor networks.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Two part questions, they're not related. Tiger 4 was just announced this week by the Secretary of Transportation, and the deadline says Councilwoman Muriel Bowser pointed out, you know, this shovel ready or whatever, you know, it has to get done. So I urge this agency to work as closely as possible with TPB to identify for the board what our ask is for Tiger 4. And second, Jack, recently I was in Chicago, and I just happened to be walking around with my wife, and I saw their fabulous bus stops. And my question is, in your 09 document you've got, and in a board document we've got the next bus mentioned, and for those who don't know, that tells you when the next bus is supposed to come. Are we integrating that technology into our shelters? It says in the memo we are under these bus stop basics. There's a next bus thing here somewhere. Is that happening?
Well, I think in two things, and Jim can speak more to it. We do have some funding under Tiger Grant to put next bus LED signs in shelters, primarily along priority corridors.
Okay.
And also the district, when they installed with their shelter contractor, spec'd the shelter so that there was a space for signage in their shelter. So it's just a matter of the funding to provide the electricity and the actual signage, and then WMATA is providing the feed to the signage. So there are programs in place. We have district money. There's district money to put additional signs in, and some of our efforts are going to be at rail stations as well as working with priority corridor networks and jurisdictions to install signs.
Could you just tell the board when the first LED next bus stop is going to, so we can have a ribbon cutting?
Yeah.
Where? They are?
Pentagon, Anacostia, Friendship Heights.
I'm in on the priority corridors, right, Mr. Chairman.
Well, just by way of answering that, currently the district has over 400 requests into PEPCO to approve power to their shelters. They've been waiting for some time. The power availability is really the critical path element in this process. We're just releasing an RFP to have a multi-year procurement for the actual LED signs that will be installed. We had a really great sign program set up for the Silver Spring Transit Center for Tacoma, and we'll be expanding. Right now, I think we've got 34 signs out in the system.
Thank you. Great report. Just a couple of things. It's been reported that we have signage in Prince George's at bus stops where the routes have been eliminated over a year. So I'm sure there are cost implications, but I'm wondering what's the protocol for how we update route information for bus stops.
Well, we should obviously, if it's our bus stop and it's only serving our system and not the county system, the stops should be taken out so that we don't have some anticipation that there's going to be service. We'll double check, and if any, you know, if staff has any specific locations, we'd be happy to check those out and make sure that those signs are taken out.
Right. Just another follow-up question relating to outreach. The reference to public open house and all the sort of information gathering to develop the recommendations, were they specific to this initiative around bus stops, or was it with general sort of public open houses and then the regional bus stop task force? Exactly what is it and how does it work and who's involved, and is that a public activity, or is it basically the professionals in transportation who met to come up with these recommendations?
Well, I'll start with the last question first. The regional bus stop task force has been meeting, oh gosh, 7, 8 years now, and it is all the professionals throughout the 12 different public agencies that are involved in the decisions about where bus stops go to facilitate the coordination. They were fully engaged in the development of the study that looked at our bus stops, our customer information strategies, our design standards and were the technical advisory committee to the study and ultimately to the guidelines that we created. As part of this study, we did hold a public hearing, a public meeting, as well as online information so that we could gather input from the public. But where we get in, every stop is a unique and specific design component. And so as we're doing our corridor development studies, we're just getting ready to kick off the F4, F6 study in Prince George's County. As we're doing our service evaluation studies, we just held a meeting last night for the W4 route. We actually look at all of the stops on the line and as part of the service review their role and whether they should be retained or whether new should be added or whether they're relocated, and that becomes a action item that comes out of those study components. As part of all of those studies, we do community meetings, we go to ANCs and civic associations and online information and to the greatest extent possible get input from the public before we come to a final recommendation and then move forward with the implementation.
Ms. Hampshire-Cowan, I think that's a very good question because I think when we speak of the staff, we actually are speaking of it from the bottom up, actually, because I think in many jurisdictions we have lots of citizen input, and most of that is initiated through citizen input, so that's how folks get that information. And I know from our side, and while it's not always metro stops, it's both metro and local jurisdictional staff, many of us have citizen activists that are always giving us that guidance, and so this document is hopefully informed by that kind of input. Yeah. Everybody can tell you where they need their stop or what they need to have done to their bus stop.
We receive input on a daily basis,
yeah,
from our writers.
That's it.
Can I say that one of the things that concerned me when I first read through the report was about 3,100 bus stops in the system are not fully accessible. And several thousand of those are not accessible at all from an ADA standpoint.
Yes.
Yes. It seems that we're ignoring the trade-off here that jurisdictions are making by not addressing the accessibility issue and forcing those accessibility costs onto WMATA as part of our access system. We pay a price. We pay a lot of price about the handicapped community not being able to access fully our bus system. A suggestion that we could better participate forcefully about the annual TIP process that jurisdictions engage in about producing their capital budget going forward, about strong suggestions about corridors that should be addressed about accessibility. There's no excuse for a lot of this. A lot of these are on federal aid highways, and a lot of the jurisdictions spend federal aid highway money. I don't believe that the ADA law itself allows for the expenditure of federal aid highway funds that do not address these problems while they're reconstructing a roadway. Somehow I get the impression that this issue has become almost totally invisible at the engineering, design, construction management side of the region's highway network among the jurisdictions and at the state level. I don't think it serves us well to have this be an invisible issue. I noticed that the TPB did put together a regional bus stop improvement program with WMATA for $16 million to improve 2,800 bus stops. And it didn't make it through the process. Suggestion that if we've already submitted a $16 million grant for upgrading 2,800 bus stops, that we try it again with Tiger 4, and that we begin to think about ways of prioritizing our leverage with the region about this issue. I would suggest maybe that the general manager talk to the executive director at the Council of Governments and see if there is interest in kind of reconvening a regional summit on bus stop access in this region. I think it could stand some focus, some visibility, some better coordination of resources. A lot of these lines cross jurisdictional boundaries and are real grist for the mill for some regional approach to this. The region has tried to do this with traffic signalization and synchronization across regional boundaries. This is as important, in my estimate, this is as important as the traffic signalization efforts at the regional level. We have to do better at this, and I would like to even suggest that we begin to set targets for accessibility on bus stops for the region, have some targets that each of the jurisdictions might be able to sign up for about increasing the amount of stops that are accessible, just as a planning guideline. I mean, we have to have some voice here about this set of issues, and I'm uncomfortable about letting it just go on general goodwill and the design interest of some design engineers.
Mr. Nath, I would say that, as Ms. Bowser mentioned, you know, through the Council of Governments efforts, there has been activity. There's been funding available. In my conversations with Ron Kirby at Council of Governments, there's a lot of enthusiasm for, you know, continuing to push in this direction, and hopefully with jurisdictional support, you know, we can get some attention and maybe another grant and can get it approved.
I will talk to Dave Robertson, see what we can do.
Thank you. The other is, half-heartedly, there ought to be a public process that allows the bus rider to nominate their most inaccessible, most ridiculous bus stop, and maybe we could do it every month. We could recognize the winners throughout the region. Let me think about it.
Okay.
Maybe greater Washington.
Well, I think we've shown you some of the winners. Just quickly, to show you a few more. These three, I think, on a good, dry, sunny day, that these are somewhat accessible. But consider rain and wet and snow and whatever, you know, getting from the sidewalk on the right to the sign or these others, you know, it makes it real difficult. John, can we just run through a couple, or at least get to the last one? Maybe we do that. Again, some good, you know, good shelters, good signage. Here's, you know, trees in the way of the stop and the bus stops in a driveway on the right side. Again, some improvements that are very beneficial. You know, bus stops right in the middle of a construction zone. You know, if we know that there's going to be construction, we try to relocate temporary stops to try to work with the contractors. This is a case where it hadn't happened. Again, I don't know how recent this one is. Next, please. I mean, vehicles that get parked. Here's, again, barriers to the bus stop. The bus stop on the right is backed by the red car, and, you know, there's no way of getting to it from this direction. Again, you know, narrow sidewalks in many jurisdictions, some of the older ones, doesn't allow for a lot of space to put the amenities that are needed. John, can you go to the last one just to kind of this is the last one. You know, a little bit of humor, but a little bit of reality of, you know, some of the improvements that people have taken upon themselves to create a bus stop.
I like that one. Where
this is probably not in the, this is probably not in the, in here, but it works well.
Which I take as a cry for help.
Well, I think it is. But we appreciate the committee's time to view these situations and encourage jurisdictional involvement with Council of Governments, with ourselves. But again, the stops are in the jurisdictions, and we're here to help as much as we can. Thank you.
Mr. Nichols?
Yeah, thank you very much. I do appreciate the report also. It's good that we have all of the data that captures this information, and we know which ones have reasonably workable access, and we know which ones are frightening or comical. Does the information infer that we have, that the goal is to, for each one of these sites that is inaccessible, impractical, nonsensical, or unsafe, is in a work program to somehow come up with a better solution? Or is it just that we have captured it, we know it, and there it is?
I think all the jurisdictions had an interest in having an inventory, so the jurisdictions are doing their own inventory. We're consolidating those into one, and we'll have that in 2 or 3 months all in one place. I think everybody's interested in knowing what the actual situation is rather than saying, we think this is the situation. So we now know, I think, the efforts in development and in re-street construction or priority corridors, I think, brings attention to some of these stops. But, you know, there's a large number that have not been addressed or, you know, are not on any work program at this point in time.
Well, I guess the point of my question is, and I guess I don't know that I'd want to nominate and see the worst one every month, but I think it isn't, but the fact, obviously, I don't mean, my question isn't facetious. You wouldn't be gathering the data if there wasn't an intent to improve the situation. So I don't mean to imply that you're just collecting it and you're going to store it there. But I'm really thinking in terms of what is there a, obviously, we've got thousands of priorities, and this one is no less of a priority, but is, do you envision a work program that would have all of the 3,000 or whatever there are that you would say are unacceptable, that are in a plan to create the most acceptable situation possible, and that it's not lost, whether it is being worked on or not, it is on a schedule to be worked on at some point?
I think our desire is we're kind of the catalyst in this. We're going to gather the information and have it. We've got a staff of some size that can assist with jurisdictions. Again, we don't own the property. We don't own the stops.
So it really is the owner of that
it's
site.
It's the owner. If we can help assist in getting grants that provide the money so that the jurisdictions, it's not an outpouring of money, but it's an outpouring of commitment and actual work to get things done.
So in this sense, you're a convener of data, and you can serve as a catalyst to continue to keep it flowing and keep it on everybody's radar screen, jurisdictionally or otherwise, and the board, in terms of our awareness of the severity of this, because it's, as you said, 8,000 people get on one stop, whether it's 500 people, and I drive by stops every day, and I'm frightened to go by the intersections because I turn a corner and I know I can't see if someone's there. And if I drive too fast, I'll run right over them. If I drive too slowly, the person behind me will run into me, and it's unsafe in any circumstance. And yet I know if you take it away, there are hundreds of people who cannot gain access to transit. So it's a serious, serious issue.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to bring this forward. This is not a complaint. It's just the fact of life. This is a situation. We'd all like to make it better, and we need the assistance of the jurisdictions in attempting to find funding and raising the priorities and, you know, try to improve as many as we can.
I do think, though, that there was an earlier question about, is there a threshold that you see not crossing about servicing a bus stop that you think is not actually safe to have people wait at or be dropped off at?
We probably should. I think that we look at that as we go along. I think we do have concerns. I don't know that we've gone to the point of saying we recommend that that stop be taken out.
We've called out the worst offenders over time, working with transportation, bus stop, or bus drivers' input. Most of the stops that we have now, there is a place where people can stand out of the way. Some are much better than others. Certainly, many can be improved. And as we talked about, it's a collective effort, and it takes collective resources, not just staffing here, but time and energy throughout.
We do get recommendations even from bus operators that we have an unsafe stop. We've gone out to stops with local jurisdictions, safety people, and actually have made adjustments, because we want it to be safe, not only for the pedestrian, but also for the bus operator to get the bus in and out of the stop.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I'm struck listening to this that 20 or 30 years ago, the people sitting here at this table would have all been local elected officials who would have taken this message back into their capital planning and said, you know, we have some responsibility to figure out in our local priorities how this sits. And I'm certainly not suggesting we don't put in for Tiger grants. Please don't take it that way. But, you know, if Metro gathered not only this information but the last mile information for a jurisdiction and sent a letter to the chairman of that council or that city board or whatever at the appropriate time as the capital plan is being developed, you've at least put it on the radar screen of the people who actually appropriate the money. And I appreciate how much you work collaboratively with staff, but in the end, those are the people who decide where the money goes. And I just really think as this board becomes less directly connected to those folks, we have to think about how we give the message in a timely manner to the people who make the decisions about the money.
I'd say ditto with an addition, though. This is a item coming back to us, and it is an item that has been worked on for a great deal of time, and I think there's a great deal of progress to that point that has been made. I'm kind of nervous about getting the worst bus stop, because after you get that bus stop, you need to know what you're going to do about it. And I think the biggest delta, as much as we can say Tiger 4 or anything else, I need 44 Tigers in order to respond to the need that we know today, let alone what we know will grow. And so I think what we've done is really addressed what we think is really the need to enhance bus service regionally with Metro as well as the jurisdictions, because this all funnels all the way back home to those folks who may never start on a Metro bus but will be part of a Metro ride. And that is what enhances that whole transportation experience. So it's important, and I think it's played an important role in terms of doing exactly what you said there. What always challenges us at the local level is who's going to answer the call once you get that data. Because once you get that data, that call from the constituent means that they're looking for a solution. And in most of these, some don't get to my capital program because there's just no room in the capital program. And we are just become advocates for the accessibility issue. We are addressing it, and we do see it as important. But I think what our voice maybe can lend to is to continue to emphasize that as capital includes purchasing budgets, buses, it means operating is hiring bus drivers. You still need a bus stop, a sidewalk, all of those things that make it work. And they don't come as readily in either of those programs. And that's really the emphasis, I think, is so important here, having the item.
It's difficult to justify that 30% of the bus stops in this regional bus system are not handicapped accessible. That means that we're making it much, much more difficult for handicapped individuals to be, and the mainstream of the transit service than it should be. And I think the authority, well, it doesn't have the ability to control the majority of these because they're on local and state streets. They depend on the jurisdictions to make the capital improvements. Our advocacy role, though, needs to be constant, and we need to have some kind of performance measurement about how accessible the bus system is for all of the potential riders in this network, and hold ourselves, we are, this board is a representative of the region, and how we work together to solve this problem, which I agree has been around for decades and decades, since probably before the authority was created. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a serious problem that we still have to find incremental solutions for. There's not going to be the capital or the capacity to make 3,200 bus stops accessible except over a long period of time with a constant focus. And that means measuring how well we're doing. If you don't, if it doesn't get measured, it doesn't count. And we don't have a regular measurement for this about the accessibility of the bus system. And I want to keep after the performance measurement. Porter?
If I could, I completely agree with what you just said. And I understand that accessibility to people with disabilities is sort of the legal construct that pushes this, but many of the bus stops that are inaccessible to people with disabilities are also inaccessible or limited accessibility to people without disabilities also. And so I think when we're talking about this, we ought to recognize that inaccessible is inaccessible, regardless of who we're talking about.
Mr. Chairman, I have a thought. I noticed in the presentation that you talked about the several jurisdictions have advertising or franchise agreements, and I wondered what your thoughts were around how that has improved bus stop, the creation of shelters and accessibility, if it has an impact. My sort of limited anecdotal experience is that if we want a bus stop or a shelter, it's pretty easy to get a shelter because of that agreement. And I don't know if you found that around the region or not.
I think it's very positive, you know, for the jurisdictions to take over the shelters and to have the opportunity to get advertising income to make those improvements. I'm sure it's beneficial to the customers, and it is attractive to bring more customers. In the urge to put up shelters, we would encourage to make sure that the placement of the shelter does provide for the right kind of access. I think there's been a little bit of quick activity to install shelters in some locations to maybe where there isn't the actual access that is needed. So, but I think it's overall it's got to be positive because people want to get out of the wind and the rain and whatever, and it's very beneficial. They look good. They provide an opportunity to put up a map, and hopefully in the time we'll have LED signs for next bus information also.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just follow up on council members, Bowser? Who's the concessionaires for these shelters, Jack? I mean, and are there more than one?
Each jurisdiction, I think, has their own contractor. I think Clear Channel is for the for the district. I'm not sure who for the other three. Montgomery also.
Are they all similar?
My understanding is they probably are similar. I'm not sure the details of how they've structured them with the jurisdiction.
And what's the revenue throw off that's coming off of these shelters with Clear Channel, for example, and the other?
I'd have to ask the jurisdictions to respond as to.
But there's a revenue stream.
There's a revenue stream from the advertising that supports the shelter program and expansion, I believe.
So there's a revenue opportunity to get back to what the chair was talking about on capital improvement budgets jurisdictionally, but we don't know. Does anybody know how much revenue is getting thrown off of these?
Again, these are jurisdictional programs, so we'd have to ask them.
We can get you the answer from DDOT. My just from recollection, I don't think it's a big moneymaker for us, but what it does is it helps us maintain the shelters in a way that had never been done before. So they'll build a very attractive shelter. They keep it clean. If it's damaged, if it gets graffiti on it, it's immediately taken down.
See how quickly you pointed the microphone at me.
Yeah.
With the beginning of the fiscal year, we activated a new contract. We had gone almost 12 months without an in-place contractor. To date, they've replaced 1,500 approximately of the 10,000 panels that are out in the system to bring them up to date. And so we're working aggressively to not only reformat to make them more readable and more understandable, but also to get everything replaced and up to date, with a primary focus of doing the service changes that are happening at that time. And then once we've completed that, we go back through the system on a programmed basis to update the panels that we know are out there.
Which I think means that not all the panels are incorrect, but sometimes they need to be replaced just for visibility standpoint and readability standpoint.
But especially if we're making route changes.
Right. No, that's the priority that Jim mentioned. Right.
So you have a target of having the 100% replacement and to current schedule?
Yes, that's correct. Each year, if I remember the contract, we're to produce 10,000 panels. And so that would allow us every year to do a complete update of all of the panels in the system.
Hearing no other comment on the issue, I ask that perhaps in 6 months or so could this item come back as an information item about what's happened, about bus stops, COG, TPB, grants, coordination with regional transportation departments, et cetera. Mr. Downey?
Thank you. I just wanted to take a moment to sound an alarm.
Yeah.
Not in the building, but up on Capitol Hill. As you may know, the Senate is marking up a transit bill today. Pretty good. The House is now acting on a highway and transit bill after several years of delay. It was just announced this morning that part of their package for funding this new program is to allocate all gas tax revenues to the highway program, which ends 30 years of progress that began with Ronald Reagan, and that all transit investment as well as congestion management and air quality investment will be funded through a general fund appropriation, which might be offset with offshore drilling and ANWR drilling and medical malpractice and other figments of imagination. But the sustained, assured federal program for transit that we absolutely need to maintain our rebuilding would be under grave risk in this particular configuration, and that should not go unnoticed.